Hi, and welcome to the Japan Baseball Weekly Podcast. It's for the week of September 12th. I'm John Gibson, and with me is Jim Allen on a carp clinching weekend. What's happening, buddy?
Carp clinching weekend. Fish time. Okay. I'm good. Yeah.
Fish are friends, not food.
Yeah, they are everybody's friends, it seems. Except the Giants. Mr. Takahashi wasn't too happy with them. I'm not going to talk about the carp.
We'll get you. We'll see who gets the end of this, he said. But it was pretty good. It was fun. It was fun to be there. Sorry you weren't there that night, that particular night. But you got to go on Sunday morning. So anyway, yep. The carp did clinch. We'll be talking about that. We'll be talking about the PL playoff picture and a lot more. So let's start swinging.
We ring the bases!
All right, so by the way, on Sunday last week, I made my Japan debut on the mound. I gave Jim a lot of little updates as I was pitching.
What, you were like live game. Tweeting from the mound?
between innings.
Oh, okay,
I wanted to tweet from the mounds because the first batter I faced, I struck him out looking on some little floater ball that barely got up there and broke over the plate. And I was calling strike three before the umpire was.
Indeed. Did you do a little dance?
I did indeed.
I bet you did. And if nobody saw it, we knew you were dancing on the inside, baby.
So it was really fun. So I think I want to do that more, and I want to get into pitching shape. So that's what I'll be doing next year, and I'll try to make my MPB debut next year sometime, maybe in the winter.
Wow. back in reality...
Back in the real world, it was a fitting end to the pennant race on Saturday. The Carpies, they overcome a deficit for the 42nd time this year to win a game, and that one clinched the Central League's pennant. Their first since 1991, ended the longest drought in Japanese baseball. Mm-hmm. They beat the Giants 6-4, and this is at Tokyo Dome. It was the seventh title in club history, or league title in club history, and they won just as I predicted. So I'm going to gloat for a moment because I want to just say that, you know, I was the only one to pick the carp this year, and I made the team look good. I did it for the team.
Is that what that was? Well, good for you.
Is that what that was?
I wasn't.
Well, you
wasn't...
know, if I hadn't picked the carp, we would have all missed.
Oh, that's what I mean. I mean, it was your devotion and self-sacrifice that saved our butts.
Save self-sacrifice. I love it. It was me being right. And you guys being wrong, but yeah, I was wrong.
And this is a case of my system was right, but I was wrong.
Right. The system was right, but I was wrong. Well, because you changed it. Yes.
I did.
Yes. Yes,
I did.
I remember that. Yeah. So, this is a team with a heck of a lot of talent, and I'm glad, you know, the players played to their, I don't want to say potential, because who knows what their potential actually is, but they did play well. They got it done. Hiroki Kuroda, the oldest pitcher in NPB history to win a clinching game,
a league clincher,
was the starting pitcher on Saturday. He gets the victory. The Carp went a franchise record 35 games over 500 with that victory, so they had never been that far over 500 in the franchise history. And then they had beaten the Giants for the sixth straight time. It was a great night. At least one drunk and title drunk Carp fan told me congratulations as I was walking back to the press box for no reason, as if I were a player or something. The fans were awesome. It was a great night. I was in the press box. There were a bunch of fans just standing behind or in that whole concourse area. I'm not sure if it was around from the third base side all the way over to the first base side, but I have to assume so because I just saw a lot of red, and they were amazing. It was just a really fun night for the Carp. It was a really fun night for the fans, and really good stuff. And we have some audio from some of the players, three of the Carp players, and I'm going to leave this a little raw so you can get a sense of what's going on. There's a hallway down behind the dugouts, and the players came through and they were walking essentially toward a bus, and they were going to go and do their beer celebration at their hotel in Shinagawa, and out pops Brad Eldred. So I started talking to him. And when I was done, I saw Jay Jackson, and he stopped to talk to me, and he's a really great guy, very friendly and accommodating. And then on Sunday, Chris Johnson talked to Jim, and you'll hear him talking about that, and you'll actually hear KJ saying, "Hey, I'll get you tomorrow." He was talking to me because he knew they didn't have time to give me a soundbite or a comment because they were going to get on their bus, but he did say, "Hey, look, we'll talk to you tomorrow." So we'll have to get Braden Higgins at some point on the show, but here are the very happy Carpies.
Okay.
I'll get you tomorrow.
In the morning.
Really?
Yeah, that's fine. Let's talk.
Congratulations, dude.
Oh, thanks, man. Yeah. Appreciate it.
Good job. Good job. Yeah, tell me about it. How did you guys get it done this year after
I mean, we have an unbelievable team. I mean, we have a great group of pitchers. We got a group of veteran hitters and a bunch of new guys that are turning into superstars. So, I mean, it's a. That's a good formula. I'm pretty sure. See the, and you can see where we finished up this early in the season. It's pretty rare, so it seems we have a real strong team.
You know, what was the biggest the thing going down the stretch? Because you guys had to beat some teams that you're going to have to beat in the playoffs.
I mean, I don't think there's nothing that changed. It's just that we put up some big runs, and the guys, I mean, we have a great group of pitchers. They're always keeping us in the game. But, I mean, more than anything, I think when we get behind in any game, we still got a chance to win no matter what because we have that kind of a confidence, and I think that's what really put us at the top of the board this year.
Now, you've been here a long time. You've been with the club for a while, through thick and thin, through injuries and stuff. What does this mean to you, and what does it mean to the organization?
I mean, to me, it's unbelievable to be able to experience this, to actually see the progression that we've gone through, you know, in the last 5 years that I've been here. And it's, you know, for the city, for a lot of the guys that have been here a lot longer than me, you've been waiting a long time for a championship, and we finally were able to come back. We'll get one.
What about clinching here at Tokyo Dome? How special is that?
I mean, it obviously be much better at home, but this is great, too. It's just, it's always nice to get out there and celebrate in the field. That was a nice thing. And you know, it didn't really matter where it's at. As long as we get the championship, it doesn't matter where.
And now you got to turn around and do it again in the postseason. How does that look for you guys?
Yeah, I mean, we got a long, long ways for that, so we're not really worried about that too much. We're just going to finish out this season strong, and then we get prepared for the playoffs. Yeah.
All right, buddy. Congratulations, man. Thanks for your time. All right, Jay.
Yes.
Congratulations, bro.
Thank you.
Man, you guys did it. Tell me what the biggest thing for you was. You're out there on the mound in that inning, and you had that big, long battle with Tsuji.
Yeah, it was a great battle. You know, this is a great team. This is the team that we needed to beat. I still got to find a way somehow to not give up runs to this team, but we came out with a win, and that's all that matters. You know, this, the team being how we are and just battling all year and just playing how we play, it's – I can't say enough about these guys more than anything else. Like, I couldn't ask for a better group.
What about for you? I mean, you came here, you know, I don't know what you expected to happen in Japan, but, I mean, what is this like?
This is awesome for me to come over here and help a team just be able to win a championship, you know, any team, but let alone come to a different country and, you know, have some key points in this season where I've been there and I've helped them. It's an amazing feeling.
Why are you so popular in Hiroshima?
I don't know. Maybe because people, I like to have fun. So people just, they enjoy watching me and I enjoy being out there. So I guess it's a mutual respect and a mutual love of the game. And everybody loves baseball and I love baseball. And I love being able to be out in front of these fans and giving it my best.
Now, you guys have about a month before you have a meaningful game. What are you going to do with the rest of the season and how do you approach going into playoffs?
Just getting better. That's the main thing. Making sure I'm refining some things. If I get out there again, making sure I'm working on things I need to work on, and just getting better to make sure in the playoffs it goes as smooth as possible so we can go ahead and take this championship completely back to Hiroshima.
Obviously, the city of Hiroshima is going to be going nuts. The fans were just amazing behind me, behind the press box. What do you think it's going to be back? I mean, you guys weren't able to clinch at home. What is it going to be like when you get back to Hiroshima?
I can't even imagine what it's going to be like when we get home. I'm looking forward to it. I'm looking forward to seeing all the fans. And my phone's actually blowing up right now from everybody all over the world saying congratulations. So it's a big moment. The fans have waited a long time for this, and it's a joy just to be able to bring it to them.
All right, one more. You guys clinched against the Giants. You're probably going to see them again in the playoffs. What do you do with this team? I mean, you're going to have to get them at some point in a meaningful game in the postseason to get through to the Japan series.
That's how it's exactly how we want it. Is we got to face the best team, the team that's dominated this division for a long time. So for me, we just got to come out and keep playing the way we've been playing. As long as we keep playing the way we've been playing, like I said earlier in the year, I put our team against anybody on this planet. You know, just the way we play and our game, and the key pieces we have all over is, we'll win. I'm not worried about it. If we see them in the finals, we got it covered. I think we'll be fine.
All right, bud.
Appreciate it.
Congratulations, man. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Take care of yourself.
Okay. Well, anyway, the first question is, it's your second year here, and again, towards the end, and what things did you notice with the pitching staff between last year and this year? Because they seem to really just step it up all across the board.
Yeah, you know, losing Mikan, you know, is a big loss, you know, would be for any team, you know. That's one of the best pitchers in Japan.
Sure.
So I think it helped, you know. And put it in the minds of all the young kids, like, hey, you know, we need to step it up. And then you got guys like Broda who are there to help them through that, you know, and they really took to it. So, yeah, I mean, all these young kids, you know, stepped it up, and they filled in that gap we needed.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you didn't add a lot of any starters other than the few starts from Braden, but Nomura came back, like, years ago.
Yeah, I mean, it was good to see, and the numbers I heard from his rookie year, you know, it's good to see him back in that form. Hopefully we can keep it for, you know, a few years to come down the road.
Right. And I also, we haven't had a chance to talk, I want to say congratulations on your contract.
Oh, well, thank you.
Yeah, I mean, really well-deserved.
It was definitely a surprise, you know, but it was definitely a well-welcome surprise.
It was a surprise. I think a lot of people were saying, you know, this is not typical for the old Carp, but
right.
The Carp, you know, with the new stadium, all they're saying is we want to keep our guys.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, it was definitely a welcome surprise. You know, I've heard in the past they don't do these things, so, I mean, it was a shock, but it was an easy decision for Carly and myself. So, we're happy for it.
Well, congratulations, you earned
it.
And the next thing is, I want to ask just a little bit about Kuroda. You know, he had a lot of, you know, physical troubles, and like, what did it do for the rest of the pitching staff to see a guy out humping it out like that? He's done in his career.
Yeah, I mean, he's done all that he has in his career. He doesn't really need to play anymore. He wants to. But just to play it out through the little injuries, you know, I mean, it shows the young kids, you know, what it takes.
Okay.
So hopefully they take to that.
And two more, and one is about Ogata. Now, last year, he seemed like he was right. It was a whole year was a learning experience, and he came out like refreshed. He seemed like relaxed and refreshed, and was there a sense that he was a little different? Or
yeah, definitely. It was definitely a little more confident this year. Like, he knew what he was doing. He has that whole year of experience. Last year, yeah, it may have been a little struggle for him, but his first year as manager. You know, running all the different parts, like the bullpen and the defense situations, you know. But now you look at him, and he's so much more relaxed in the dugout. As we say, the panic button isn't being pushed as much. So, I mean, just the 1 year, he's grown as a manager, and I can only imagine what it's going to be in the next few years.
Okay. And last one is, now you've got about 3 weeks before you got a meaningful game. Is it easier as a pitcher to stay sharp?
It's almost actually a month.
Okay.
I guess the Climax Series starts on October 12th.
That's right. You guys start later than everybody else.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's going to be tough keeping that in mind. But, you know, I got two or three more starts coming up. After that, I might take a little mental break trying to get refocused. And
okay.
Then, you know, let's switch it back on for the playoffs.
When you go into those games, is there a little bit like spring training to it where you're sort of, I'm going to work on this and sharpen it up for the playoffs, or this is an issue? Or is it just keep going like it's every game?
I think it still has to be just, you know, do what you do to get guys out. It still has to be that kind of mentality, because you can't take it out and be, okay, I'm going to work on changeups today and throw a million changeups when it's your worst pitch. I mean, that does nothing for you.
Okay.
So.
All right. Well, anyway, thanks for your time and congratulations again.
Yeah, no problem.
All right, cool. Thank you very much, Jim, for going out there on Sunday morning and talking to Chris Johnson.
Well, thank you
to all
for
the guys.
Well, thank you for going out Saturday and being there when they clinched. How, that was very noble of you.
Oh, you know, I had to do an office shift, but I wanted to be there, and I finished around 7 o'clock and zipped on over and got to sit with Wayne and Jason for a short time, and then had to go sit by myself closer to the fans, and they were rocking, man. It was,
yeah.
I mean, I'm like, when Seiya Suzuki came up to bat, they were doing this really cool chant. So the next time he came up, I had to take video of it and put that on Twitter because it was so cool. So I did that. But what stuck with you from the chants that I got?
Well, I enjoyed it was kind of, I've been hearing the same thing. You know, it's like the Carp a few days ago where they would had to lose every single remaining game of their remaining 14 games. Okay? And the Giants were going to have to win every one of their remaining 12 games. So it was basically already said and done. So for the past week and a half, I've been talking to Carp guys for a story, for a bunch of different stories. And basically, I've been hearing the same thing. And yeah, confidence is a big one. And Brad has brought that out. And I think that is so true. I think, you know, he's been telling me this over and over and over again. And I have to think it is really true. Because, or at least it's a huge part of their success. The self-belief that they could be there last year when everything... I think there was a lot of doubting and I don't know, I use the word self-abuse, but there was a lot of self-loathing over, you know, the accident that they crashed into last year. And people kind of, you know, picked themselves up by their bootstraps and they said, hey, we are good enough to do it. You know, that confidence that they showed 2 years ago was back in spades.
Right.
And I think that really was the difference. A, we are confident. We do know we can be on the field with these guys. This ain't new. And we've been through the ringer. I mean, they went through the ringer last year. So they know what it's like when you don't have it, all your stuff together.
Yeah, for me, from the talk that you had with Chris Johnson, I think it was... the most provocative thing I've heard from any of the players this year, and him saying that the manager didn't hit the panic button as much this year. Mm. it's not to say that he didn't hit it at all, apparently, but that he knew what he was doing. And, you know, we don't hear these things. I mean, you get the sense a lot of times that players, when they give that answer, well, that's the manager's decision, or I'm not in control of that. Those comments mean, well, I would do something differently, but I can't do anything about it, so don't blame me. You know, sometimes that's what I hear. It's not all the time, because obviously they're not the manager. Their job is to go out and play.
Indeed.
And so, but when you hear a comment like that, you start to think, okay, well, maybe we did have some disagreement with what was going on the field, but there's really nothing you can do. And, you know, we haven't talked about Ogata and his management style and what he has done, and I just think he just didn't get in the way. You know, I don't think he did anything great. I just he was, as a player, I think he was very prepared. Every time he went out, he was just always hurt. He always ended up getting hurt. He was often hurt in his career.
Okay, our viewpoints are somewhat different, but our timelines are a little different, so our viewpoints are a little different. I think what I saw, what I took from that was, yeah, he was not quite prepared for the challenges he was going to have to do day in and day out, sort of just the drudge work of managing and all. You know, that's a huge thing to take on when you're not used to it. He never managed before. He had been a coach. But it was a new thing for him, and being thrust into that, it can overwhelm you. And it's like he was in over his head, and I think he knew he was in over his head, and he went to work. He went to work on, and you know, he did his homework. He came out of I think he went into fall camp saying, "Man, I got a lot of work to do."
Yeah,
this managing
gig.
I think so, and I think he knew it came out this time, you know, this is, we can do this better, we can do that better, we can do that better. Being the Carp, I'm sure they had a lot of communication with the coaches. What can we do better? What went right and what didn't go right? And where do we have to, you know, speed up the process? I'm sure that happened. And didn't push the panic button. I think that's absolutely right. He was better. He was... I agree with you. As a player, he's extremely well prepared, and he wasn't prepared for how hard it is to prepare to be a manager.
Yeah, and And I think Chris gave us a little insight. He says a little bit about when he said positioning players defensively in certain situations. I think that's a big deal. We saw some of the Tigers fans blow up about having their outfielders playing in and getting beaten in a game at Hiroshima this year. So, I mean, those things, you know, I didn't see him doing a lot of that. It seemed like he got the defensive players in at the right times when he wanted to get a better defense on the squad, on the field. You look at what's going on with Hector Luna. Sure, he probably could have been up on the top team playing because he's probably not injured anymore. But when they looked around, they said, look, we've got three pitchers who are contributing, and we love having Brad Eldred be a big threat in the lineup. So
and
this kid, Tomohiro,
exactly.
Tomohiro Abe, is not killing us at third.
He's more than not killing you. This is the guy they needed at third base last year. And it's like, well, sorry, you know, Hector, we're so glad you wanted to play for us, but right now this guy's doing it.
Yeah, and I think with the pitching, I mean, he did use Jay Jackson a lot, but I talked to him in the dugout a couple weeks ago, and he said, hey, look, I'm prepared to throw. I like throwing. And, you know, I found it very interesting. I figured they were going to give Kuroda some time off, but I found it very interesting that they deactivated Jackson as well on Sunday. And so those two guys are getting some rest, and they probably need it and look to get recharged before going into the postseason. But, I think he did a much better job this year. Mm. We didn't talk about it enough, obviously, but there are a lot of little decisions that managers make that really get overlooked. You know, when do you play the infield in? Do you play halfway? Do you play in at the corners only? And, you know, you have to be watching those games to see these things, and they're subtle things, but they're important.
Yeah, there was, I think, you know, obviously there were some situations where he wasn't quick enough with a decision, and he made really strange ones that you wouldn't see normally a veteran manager make. I mean, you see veteran managers do weird things sometimes, but it was sort of like very unusual. And I thought, it's just that he's rookie mistakes is what I was thinking. But even at the end of the season, I didn't see a lot from him. I didn't see a lot. And I got some ribbing on Twitter for this yesterday. You know, Jim Allen didn't think, oh God, I should stick around. I didn't see much. But, you know, I didn't see everything. So, yeah, well, more credit to him. I'll own that. I was wrong. He was pretty good this year. I talked to him, I thought, this guy's cool and collected. This is the guy I remember as a player who was a Takumi Kuriyama type player. You know,
right.
Who could do everything. You know, he could hit some power, steal some bases, draw walks, hit for extra bases. He could do it all. And it was a fun player to watch. And as the team sort of became that kind of fun team this year instead of the last year that, you know, the team that kind of things went wrong.
Okay, yeah, things did go wrong. But I like what Jackson said about wanting to play the best, and they're looking forward to going up against the Giants again in the postseason. Mm. And, you know, that's the way it should be. And I guess it's right. And we're just assuming they would play the Giants. The Giants are going to have to win to get through to the second stage. But it looks like they're going to... You know, they're going to be able to play at home. Hmm. They're probably going to be playing the Bay Stars. And the Bay Stars are going to have to come up huge to pull a big upset there. So it might very well be the Giants.
It could be, but I also like the Bay Stars' ability to, you know, if it's three games, to come in and really get under, and for Ramirez to come in and, like, really get under the Giants' skin in some ways. You know, I mean tactically or do something. So I love that. And it's going to be a lot of fun. So, yeah, I'm looking forward to that. Okay, so anyway, you know, as you were mentioning, the Carp had their franchise record for wins. And actually, it was interesting because they mentioned that on Thursday when the Carp were poised to clinch again, but the Giants refused to lose.
Right.
And... Koji Yamamoto, former Carp manager and great Central League great, was saying, "Oh yeah, well they have the record, the franchise record for wins. but they play more games these days. Okay, and I love Koji, but it was their 129th game. And the old schedule was 130.
I know why he didn't figure it out, because he doesn't have that many fingers. Hashtag
hi. Oh, that's mean. That's mean. That's mean. I love Koji. I really do. We have settled all our little differences, and I love.
Oh, so it sounds like you like Koji now, as opposed to I like Koji.
Yeah, as opposed to in 2013 when we had some misunderstandings during the right. WBC. Okay, now anyway, so that was one thing that was interesting, and the other thing you mentioned was it was the Carps 42nd come from behind win, and I'm gonna say. Who's had more in NPB this year?
More come from behind victory.
Yes.
Or I'm sorry, because there's different definitions of come from behind. Overcoming a deficit.
Okay. Anytime you're trailing, you're behind.
Yes.
How many
who
times?
Has more?
Yes.
The Hawks?
No.
I got the Giants.
No.
I got no idea.
The Eagles and the Lions. Now, the reason why they have more come-from-behind victories is fairly obvious. Well, probably the basic level is fairly obvious. They were behind a lot.
Yes.
And that's basically why.
Bad starting pitching will do that.
Yes. So that's basically what happened with those two teams. And the Lions, of course, are not a dissimilar team to the Carp in some ways, in that they've got a really potent offense and their starting pitching is up and down. But... The Lions and the Eagles, yes, did do it more. Now, the Carp did that was special wasn't the 42 come from behind wins.
Mm-hmm.
Was that they were 42? Well, today they lost their 48th game when they were trailing at some point, and so they are now 42-48-1 in every game at which they were behind at some point. Oh, we're beating you. Good for you.
42-48-1. So they've lost more often than they've won.
Yeah, when they were behind.
And they've been behind a lot.
Well, yeah, everybody's behind a lot. You know, everybody gets behind a lot. But the point is, the Carp won a lot of those, and they didn't lose a lot of those.
Right.
Yeah. So the point being, you know, you're ahead of the Carp. Okay. Yeah, you keep trying that. Let's see how that works.
Yeah, that's not a good formula. Okay, no. So they did it this year. They got the job done. I look at their 1-2-3 batters and say these guys probably are the best maybe in Japan in terms of consistency. And I'm just saying they played a lot of games. Jim is doing a gag move.
I know, John. They play
just about every game.
John, stop salivating over Kikuchi. I mean, he's a really good player.
They
played,
look, Tanaka, Kikuchi, and Maru. Those three were very consistent.
You just said,
all season
hold
long.
On, John. You just said Kikuchi is the best second baseman. Tanaka's the best shortstop, and Maru's the best center fielder.
No. I'm just saying those guys. Their production at the plate.
Their production at
their 1-2-3 batters. I'm
okay,
just talking about what they were hitting.
Those three as a group
as
in
a
the
group.
1-2-3 spot. I'll buy that.
Okay, all right.
Okay, maybe good.
I didn't present the argument there.
Okay, well. Good. Okay, we're I'm with you.
Okay,
I might go with that. Yeah.
Okay, you can look up the numbers later, and I'm
yeah,
sure you will.
But that's reasonable. That's a reasonable argument.
Okay, and then Takahiro Arai emerging as an MVP candidate, Seiya Suzuki emerging as a budding annual perennial all-star future major league prospect, the guys in the bullpen, Chris Johnson as an ace, Yusuke Nomura winning a bunch of games, Jay Jackson and Shota Nakazaki at the back of the bullpen as fixtures there. They just had excellent work throughout the season by all these guys. These were the main guys who trucked them to this Central League pennant. But I think all the other guys did a great job too. The Kazuki Yabuta who came in late. Akitake Okada, the rookie who had a shaky start but was thrust into the rotation early on because of injuries and then taken out. And now he's back and doing what he's doing. So I mean, they had a lot of reasons. I mean, you look at Johnson; he's got 14 wins. Nomura has 14 wins, and then, you know, Kuroda is just 9-8. He's not, in terms of wins, he didn't do an outstanding job. He won that game, but he started out shaky in that game on Saturday. In fact, he gave up a home run early, and it looked kind of bad. But, you know, I said, look, I'm going to the dome, Kuroda. Don't blow this game. You guys are going to clinch today, so just keep it at two runs. And he basically did. They gave up a run later on, but it wasn't because of poor pitching or anything. He pitched fairly well.
Yeah, he pitched really tough. I mean, he's not in good shape.
He battled. He's not. In fact, Ogata said it in the post game on field interview where he said, well, you know, the guy hasn't been 100% all season, and he just goes out there and fights. So, so these guys, the defense up the middle, I mean, I think is the best in Japan, including I don't know about Maru in the outfield. He's okay in center. I don't think he's got a great arm. I don't think he's got anything, but he's pretty good. And then, the defense is just can't be understated. I think that defensively, if you look around, they had to squint their eyes a few times in a few places in left field sometimes when they put Ryuhei Matsuyama out there in right field. They maybe had to squint their eyes a little bit, but for the most part, they put really good defensive players on the field, and I think that made a difference for them as well.
I think it did, and I think Seiya Suzuki became a pretty good outfielder. He was
a great arm. Yeah.
Yeah, last year I was calling him Seiya Suzuki because I'm thinking if you keep running the bases and if you keep running the bases and trying to catch balls the way you're doing, you know, it'll be see you later, baby. And but there was a lot of that, and I think something Maru told me early in the season was something, it was interesting that I think he and Kikuchi had the same problem last year. They took big steps forward the previous two seasons. They were really on top of the world, and they came into the 2015 season as favorites. And I think what they both, well, Maru told me he did, he said basically, I thought I was pretty much set. It was all about replicating what works. My problem was replicating was doing what I did last year, you know, in last year's games. I wanted to do that. I wanted to sort of like bring out a video.
Right.
And it didn't work. And interestingly enough, Tetsuto Yamada told me exactly the same thing, about a couple months later, and I said, "What happened to you last year?" He says, "Well, about the end of April, I realized that trying to replicate 2014 was a losing strategy."
Oh.
And so he spent basically all of May basically going back to square one. You know, what is it that I need to do? Where am I now? What are the pitchers trying to do to me now? What do I do to take care of that? And then he came out in June, and he's been the same player since June 2015. And I saw that in Kikuchi, and you know, he said, Kikuchi said to me in June or so on, he said, look, he said, you know, I love they're not asking me to bunt, but that's only because I'm producing runs.
Right.
He said, I'm happy not bunting. I don't want to go back and be the bunter.
Right. The bunter. So, these guys played really well. I think they played a really good interleague series. They were 1-1-1 with a 1-1 tie in the middle game of that series in June. So, I'm looking at the postseason and I'm thinking, okay, is this team was really great in the regular season, but can it win in the postseason? Mm-hmm.
Postseason. Now, interestingly enough, as you and I believe Jason also commented on Twitter, or was it just Jason, that the Giants had the Giants lost on Thursday,
right?
Or the Giants lost on Wednesday or Tuesday, they would the Carp would have tied their record for the fewest games needed to clinch the Central League pennant.
How nice. No, I was not among those who commented on that.
So that was the 1990 Giants, who blew away the Central League like nobody's business. Okay, so the 1990 Central League Giants went 88-42. Holy smokes, in a 130-game season, they went 88-42. Okay, so they had the record for the fastest Central League team ever to clinch. Okay.
Okay,
so then to bring on the Carp, and they finished second fastest by clinching on Saturday. Well, you know what happened to the 1990 Yomiuri Giants in the Japan series?
I do not.
Don't know. Okay, they played the Cebu Lions. They lost 5-0, 9-5, 7-0, 7-3. See you later.
Bye.
Goodbye, indeed. Yes, really, really, they just got beat. They got whooped. So
what's the correlation?
The correlation is, you know, they're strong in the league, but it's a different game. You know?
Okay,
that's my point. It's a cautionary tale, I guess. Just because you blow away the league don't mean you can win walk away in the Japan series.
Yeah, and I mean, I like Chris Johnson at the front of the rotation. I like Nomura. I like Hiroki Kuroda. But after that, I don't know what kind of pitching they're going to get in that second stage. Whoever is going to get that game one start is going to have to pitch on short rest if the series goes long. I don't like that. So I think if they're going to win, they're going to win it in a minimum maybe of 5 games, 4 on the field.
Mm-hmm.
But anything longer than that, I think it gets iffy for them and they might struggle. But of course, what Brad said, you know, they're very confident. Mm-hmm. They can come back in games. So even if they get behind early, I don't think it's over. And they're going to be playing at home, and I think they're really comfortable there. So I'm going to say they're going to get through to the Japan series, but we will talk about that when, you know, when we cross that bridge, when we see what their opponents are and what they look like.
I'm with you with that. I think they have the stuff to do it. I also think that their offense is in such a different class,
mm-hmm,
than anybody's. And Hayato Sakamoto is a tremendous player, and I think and Garrett Jones is having a great second half of the season. And Abe's been playing well. Oh, and the rest of the guys, you know, some of them can hit some of the time. But the Carp lineup is just loaded. I mean, who's the weak out in that the Carp lineups, I guess, Ishikawa.
Yeah, when you get down to 8-hole in the catcher. I mean, Abe, you know, Abe's still unproven, let's put it that way. But, I mean, he's like I said, we haven't really talked about the fact that Hector Luna isn't around.
Yeah. Yeah.
So he's doing okay.
Yes, indeed he is. Okay, so yeah, I like him. I like him a lot. I think that's an offense that could give. Now the question is, can they do it to the Pacific League? That's a different issue.
Right. And as far as second and third place, it looks like the Giants have basically locked that up. They just have to close it out, and then the Bay Stars have a 3.5-game lead over the fourth place Swallows, and you know, those teams play 4 more times. They're going to have to win a game at least against the Swallows to, like, clinch that. But I think they definitely have the upper hand, so I'm fully expecting them to pull that off and looking forward to seeing them in the postseason for the first time.
Yeah, yeah.
In the Climax Series for the first time.
Well, sure. Yeah, well, it's true. It's been 18 years for them, so it's not like it happened yesterday.
Right, right. Let's take a quick look at the Pacific League now. And I felt like I was seeing a small crack in the SoftBank armor when the Hawks... They brought up Barbaro Canizares the other day. Canizares. And they put him in the 5-hole and they're like, hit. You know, Hugh, hit. You know, we haven't used you at all. You're supposed to be a really good player. Hit. And I thought that was kind of a weird move. I mean, obviously, the Yanagita's injured. They wanted some pop. Uchikawa's, you know, up and down a little bit. He's dealing with injuries and stuff like that. So, you know, I'm seeing Kudo. I had to take a picture the other day. He's making all these weird frowning, scrunchy, upset, skies falling faces in the dugout. Mm-hmm. And he's not throwing his hands up in the air and on the dugout in front of the cameras, but I get the feeling he's going to the back and doing it. So, I didn't think it would be this close. I thought they would wrap this thing up, and the longer it goes, the more confidence the fighters get. But I'm sticking with my pick. I think the Hawks are going to come through this somehow, some way.
Okay. Oh, the pennant race? They both are showing some vulnerabilities. But, you know, I think the Pacific League, I think if you're the Pacific League owners as a group, I mean, you might not be happy with the way your team's playing, but you have to be, you know, if you're, you know, kind of like a John kind of fan where they want their league to win, they're not feeling, you know, vitriol against the team that beat them in the pennant race. They would probably be thinking, yeah, we're good. I mean, the Fighters, if the Fighters is our second best team, the team that, you know, if the Fighters is our second best team, we're in good shape.
I don't know what you mean by that comment, John.
What I mean is John has an almost unnatural ability to be positive and humanistic about teams that, you know, he dislikes or that, you know, battle his team in, all season in the pennant race. You know, and he'll say, oh, you know, we should the National. I'm going for the National League because I'm a National League guy. I'm going for California because I'm a California guy. And I'm going like, man, I can't do that if the Giants lose a pennant race to the Dodgers, which is John's team. I hope the Dodgers rot in hell.
Okay,
you know, that's right. What I mean. Well, that's sort of natural. That's the basic.
I'm just
instinct.
Bringing rainbows and flowers you and are, cotton candy
you
to the party.
You are such a positive guy. I'm in awe of you, man.
Okay, I wasn't sure how you meant that, but we got to move on in the interest of time now. So
okay.
I know you wanted to talk about Yasuhiro Ryan Ogawa of the Swallows, and he won starting pitcher of the month. You said it as you put it, starting pitcher of the month.
Right, indeed.
And he credited Yakult's conditioning program. So what did you want?
Well, I raised this topic last year about how both the Hawks and the Swallows blew away their leagues in the second half. And that they had a condition a very similar approach to conditioning last year, and I was thinking when Ogawa said that, I was wondering, oh, okay, now I was curious how that affected other Swallows pitchers, but you know, having looked at it, I'm thinking, I'm not so certain. Now I think it's helped two guys for sure.
Okay,
it's helped Ogawa. Because he's now become like a second half beast.
Yeah.
He did last year and he's doing it this year. Well, I mean, last year his whip, basically after July, the whip drops in the league. It does, it's kind of an annual thing. And his did slightly, but as he knocked a run off his ERA after July.
Right.
Okay, and the league also.
But he was hurt, yeah, he was.
Well,
he was dealing with injuries.
That was last year. And then this year he's knocked almost two runs off his ERA when he actually was dealing with injuries.
Actually was, okay.
And Akiyoshi.
You, put those fake injuries down and get over there and pitch.
I mean, this year, yeah, he was off the roster quite a bit. The problem
right.
is, the study I'd like to do is comparing all those Swallows pitchers who pitched the first half and second half of this season and last. The only problem is, I think the only two are Akiyoshi and Ogawa.
Right.
Because basically the other starters were, you know, Arakaki and Naruse and Yamanaka and Muranaka and Shohei Tateyama and Yoshinori Sato. And, you know, they didn't. So it's hard to
right.
tell. But the two guys who did go through the conditioning program from start to finish... have shown benefits, but as the Swallows as a whole, no. Actually, their ERA has gone worse than the league in the second half last year.
Right, and then I was thinking, I'm like, that's interesting that he's talking about the conditioning program, because I remember doing a story,
mm-hmm.
I'm sorry, translating a story about, I guess it was 3 years ago, that they were getting a new conditioning and strength coach.
Kitsunai.
And going to implement some new things. And then they, you know, a year later, they come up with the championship run. And most of the guys were healthy. And then this year, again, the injury bug didn't just come there for a couple of bites. It's been feasting and it's, you know, moving its family in. And
yeah, it's been
a
bad
year. I mean, again, they have a bunch of injuries.
Yeah, it has been a bad year. But, you know, I don't, again, I mentioned, I don't know if I mentioned this, my little pet theory. His name's Bob. And basically what Bob...
Oh, I'm supposed to laugh there. Insert laugh.
Yeah,
track.
Exactly. And Bob tells me that they might not, the very severe conditioning program that worked for the Hawks and Swallows last year when they implemented it new... might have had some unexpected downturns this year.
Might have.
Yeah, okay. Might have caused some players who were healthy last year not to be healthy this year. Now, Tomohito Ito, the Swallows' bullpen pitching coach, told me that, he thinks a lot of Mr. Keats and I's conditioning program, but he also says, I think it does not help, results. It may degrade results in the first half of the season, but it more than makes up for it in the second half. That seems to be the plan. Now, that certainly might be the case for Ogawa and Akiyoshi. And if Ogawa's any, I hope he's gonna have a somewhat decent first half. If that second half payoff's gonna mean anything,
right, right. Well, it paid off in the form, and we're making a four-seam transition here. It paid off in the form of him being selected the starting pitcher of the month.
The winning starting pitcher of the month.
For August, and Ryosuke Kikuchi of the Carp was the top-performing hitter. Is that what you want to call him?
No, basically we can call him the high-average hitter of the month.
I was going to say, yeah, I didn't think you were going to settle for that, so that's interesting. But yeah, I'm glad he got the award. I did hear a couple of guys pick him as the MVP for the Central League, so I kind of cheered at the TV when I heard these announcers talking about, or analysts saying that the other night after the Carp clinch, so that was nice to hear. And then in the Pacific League, Yuki Matsui of the Eagles, their closer, and he had a really good month, and then Hideto Asamura of the Lions, and he hit .384 and had 38 hits.
Right.
That was and 26 RBIs, and they put that he had a stolen base, and I still claim that he had a mask and a gun at that point. So
that's mean.
I'm not sure that's robbery of a base.
Well, the interesting thing about the Pacific League, they were really interesting selections. Now Matsui, I'm not against Matsui. I thought he had a decent month. I think Chris Martin had a better month in July. But here's the thing. I think Matsui got the award. Usually relievers win the award when no starting pitchers win three games. Or nobody has a record better as good as 3-1.
Okay.
Okay. But this past month, there were six Pacific League starters who had records as good as 3-1. And I think they were going, well, none of them kind of knocks our socks off. We had one guy who was 4-0 with a mediocre ERA, and we had one guy who was 3-1 with a pretty good ERA. And so normally relievers, to be honest, usually don't get it. They don't get it unless they have a 0.00 ERA. So he was...
And like 40 saves.
Yeah, well, no, nine's fine. But so that was weird. I think it was a case of they didn't want to... They couldn't really make a pick. Now we get to the next one. Asamura is really interesting. Asamura is, I think, the best player in the league last month. He's an okay second baseman, and he didn't. And they had a chance to pick a guy who hit over 400.
Mm-hmm.
And they went, Katsuya Kakunaka, we think you're a terrific hitter, but you did nothing other than, you know, he was the Yoichi Adachi of the Pacific League last month. I think what I'm seeing from these really weird selections, I think the selectors are alternating, and that the people who picked Adachi in July are not the people who picked Asamura in August, because if they were going by the same criteria, they would have picked Kakunaka, who had hit an empty .411, and
right.
Asamura hit some home runs, but he also hit 14 doubles, which is a huge number. He had 26
RBIs are big. Yeah.
They did. He scored 20 runs, which wasn't as many as Shohei Ohtani, but you know Shohei Ohtani didn't have as good a month this month as he had last month when he should have been the MVP. He should have been the best hitter. You know, he wasn't the best player, but I think Asamura was. Kikuchi, no, I'm not buying it. Seiya Suzuki, maybe. Hayato Sokomoto would have been my choice. I thought he was. He had a vastly better month at the plate, and he's a pretty darn good fielder, so I would have given it to him. But, you know, Kikuchi, .358, wow. Well, Suzuki hit .359, so what's up with that? Suzuki was a much better hitter, but he's a, you know, he's an outfielder. I wouldn't have given it to him.
Okay.
Okay.
All right, and making a two-seam transition, I wanted to bring up the fact that the attendance was up across. There was a report this past week that attendance was up across the league for 11 of the 12 clubs, with the exclusion of SoftBank, and it was slight. It was a 3.4% rise in the Central League and a 3.2% in the Pacific League. But I've been saying it all season. I think MPB is on a high water mark right now. The interleague play, the format is really filling seats throughout stadiums in Japan. Lotte had the biggest jump in attendance. It was 17.9%, but I think that's because of the high expectations, and they did start out really well. The Giants topped all teams in attendance with 41,972 per game. So that just figures that Japan's team is the most popular team, and
well, Japan's team is a popular team, and they played very well.
If the Tigers
were in first place, they'd blow the Giants out of the water in attendance because their stadium's so much bigger.
Well, yeah, the thing is that you've got all these teams in contention. Everyone, I mean, you still look at nobody's completely out of it. Even the Dragons had a little 7-game winning streak. Or 6-game winning streak, or whatever it was, and they thought they were in. I think you were talking last week that they, you know, if they keep this up, they're going to be in it. And so I think that helps with the attendance because all the games have so much meaning. So I think I think they work hand in hand. So that's really good. That's good stuff to know for their club.
I'm going to throw some numbers. Speaking of attendance, since you brought it up, I don't know if you saw the bit I threw out there about Shohei Ohtani the other day about his starting.
I saw it. I don't remember it, okay. But if you just give me that. Yeah.
Okay, well, but you saw it anyway. So the average, the attendance, the difference between when the Fighters play in one of those big PL parks, when Ohtani is pitching and he isn't, the average difference, 5,000 per game.
Wow.
Okay, now, that ain't Yu Darvish, because Yu Darvish, in his career in Japan, he packed in an extra 1,323 on average, more than the Fighters drew. So
1,300.
And Ohtani's been packing in over 5,000 more than his teammates.
Wow.
Yeah.
So, and also, the Marines were talking contract with Tsutomu Ito to extend him, and I think that's a good idea. I mean, third place, 3 out of his 4 years with talent that's, you know, probably not championship talent. And I think he's doing a good job. He's developing guys. Tamura behind the plate is doing really well. You saw that when he, and I don't know how much of a correlation it was, but he got injured and was deactivated and they started to lose some games. So I'm not saying necessarily that it was cause and effect, but I suspect there was some impact there for sure. So I'm happy with the move. I'd like to see him go back there. I think the fans of the team would agree, and that's probably a good move. All right, let's go to fielding questions. All right, Max, thank you, buddy. Thank you for your patience. Mm-hmm. We're getting to his question finally. And he says, how will Japan's WBC roster be determined? Will it be the same guys from the Samurai Japan roster from last fall? Will the roster that's used in November for the games against Mexico and the Netherlands at Tokyo Dome be the set roster for March? And does Shinosuke Abe, Takahiro Arai, or Ichiro make the cut if healthy? Thanks as always. All right, Max, so several questions in there.
Yeah.
Jim, which one do you want to attack
first?
Well,
I think Max would pass his quota there.
You hear that, Max? You only get 3 strikes, buddy.
Wow, like felons around here. Okay, will it be the same guys from the Samurai Japan roster from last fall? The answer is no, it's always changing. Will the roster that's used in November for the games against Mexico and the Netherlands be the set roster for March? No, but that's going to be the next to the last chance for Japanese-based players to cement their spot, and it's really hard. The competition is really, really tough. Shinosuke Abe, Takahiro Arai, what do you think?
Well, I want to go back for a second.
Okay, go ahead.
Remember in 2006 when Jerry Colangelo, and I know this is going to take a circuitous route to the answering this
circuitous.
Question.
Circuitous!
I said it.
You did.
In 2006, I covered the World Basketball Championships, and I got to talk to Jerry Colangelo, and he was heading up the U.S. team, and they were saying, hey, look, we want to use the business model that other countries have, where we have a pool of players, a set pool, and we use that to set the roster for our team. So basically, we get players who are interested, who want to play, who have the talent. We make up a larger than we need roster. We have these spots available, and that's the pool of players we basically pull from. And I think that's the same setup that Japan has. Mm-hmm. Basically, there are roster spots, and there are set guys who are going to be on the roster because they're interested in playing. And so the guys that you've seen in the past are the guys you're going to see. That might not be the same configuration because some guys might be injured, some guys might not be available. And some guys might have emerged, like, say, a Suzuki. Mm. but I think it's basically the same general pool.
Yeah, it's a tough selection because you've got guys who have been really good and, you know, guys who can play against really top-line pitching,
mm-hmm.
you know, like Yuki Inagita, but, you know, he's hurt. So he's, right. And he's hurt and he's coming off of this problem and that problem and... I've got other issues with Yuki Inagita's swing that I'm not a big fan in some respects, but yes, it's going to be interesting. The competition's going to be really tough. Now, I like that idea, and I think that is essentially true. We have a full-time manager, which America does not. You know, Japan's one of the few full countries with essentially now full-time national team managers.
Right.
I think that's huge. You're going to see that. I agree with you. You're more or less going to see the same pool, but the competition is going to be fierce. I mean, guys who are not fit at the right time ain't going to play. Just because it used to be they'd wait. You know, in 2013, Koji Yamamoto basically brought Yohei Oshima and Kazuki Yoshimi to camp, even though they couldn't play.
Right.
One of them went to left to have Tommy John surgery. Okay, so what about Shinosuke Abe and Takahiro Arai?
Abe, I don't think so. He's not going to catch.
Right.
He's a marginal fielder at best at first, even though Luis Cruz says he's good. I'm not buying that. But
I'm not either.
So I don't see him making it. I don't see. I mean, he's if they want to carry a guy who'd be a really good pinch hitter. That's a great roster spot for him. Maybe he could DH a little bit, but yeah, I think there are better options once you get him on the base because he's
clogs up the base.
Hard to move around the bases. Right. Takahiro Arai, well respected, but it depends on who else is healthy.
Mm.
I think Seiji Uchikawa, if he's healthy and his back is willing, he's probably a better hitter. Mm. Regardless of what the averages tell you, I think he's a better hitter.
Yep.
So I'd pick him over Arai. And Ichiro, never. I think he's done with the Samurai Japan team, in part because major league teams frown upon their foreign players participating in the tournament. And I think Ichiro's got his own little program, and I don't think he wants to get hurt and damage his chances to play until he's 50.
Aha! Okay, so we have... Now, I'll tell you, you know what I like about Arai? Is he can pick it at first base. I mean, he's always had the ability, but when he has the will, he's really he has some real good instincts. I mean, he's I don't think anybody in Japan plays far behind the bag. I don't think anybody in Japan plays far enough behind the bag. And Arai does, and he's got it, and he covers some pretty good ground back there. He's a pretty he's not slow. I mean, he's not fast, but he's really got quick hands, good hands. I love that at first base. But do I want him as my first baseman? You know what? I would almost prefer Arai, as much as I say that, I would prefer Arai to Shonakata. Shonakata is not a bad first baseman, but I Japan cleanup hitter. He needs a lesson in getting back to the basics. I mean, his game is so messed up right now.
Yeah,
but I don't see Kokubo taking a stick to him. He'd like to. Inaba sure would. Give Inaba a stick, he'd hit Nakata with it in a flash. Okay, wow. He said basically he does not have the guts to bat cleanup. And so we keep Tsutsugo to bat cleanup to basically to make our Nakata mad.
So
there's that. So now we have a disagreement, and I think Ichiro is going to play. And I think Ichiro's going to, and I'll tell you why, and it's because Ichiro, regardless of what you think of him as a player, Ichiro...
Not me personally.
Okay, no, but Ichiro is a god in Japan among Japanese baseball players. And these guys, the guys who were fooling around in 2013 in their first practice at AT&T Park, once they realized they could pull the ball in batting practice into the bay, all the Japan players did was see who could hit the most balls into the bay. That was their one batting practice, big practice at AT&T Park. And that afternoon, Hensley Mullins, the coach of the Netherlands, said, basically, I'm going to fine any of our left-handed hitters who try to pull the ball out of the park. Because I don't want to do that. I don't want to see guys doing that. It's a waste of energy. None of them are Barry Bonds. I don't want to see it. And Japan guys were going, whoop-de-doo, let's have fun. Let's have a good time. They were partying out at AT&T Park. It was like an amusement ride. And then, and that's they were not taking it seriously. And if Ichiro was there, what are the chances they're doing that? Zero.
Less than zero.
Less than zero. Exactly. Everybody wants to play with Ichiro. And the competition to play with Ichiro is tougher than the competition to play for Japan. Now, Ichiro might not be a starter, but having Ichiro on that team is a huge thing.
Leadership counts.
Leadership does count. Heart counts, effort counts, preparation counts. Ichiro's on that team, Japan's going to win another title because the players will come ready to beat everybody.
All right. I don't see it happening, but if it does, I'll be there watching with everybody else. And I don't know about... I'm rooting for the United States. I told you that before. So.
Well, good. I'm rooting for Japan, not because I'm disloyal Donald Trump, but... basically my baseball life is like Tuffy Rhodes. It's all due to Japan. So these are my guys.
And I did see that our buddy Claudio Rodriguez had he put together a lineup that he thought he's trying to project the lineup for the Samurai Japan Games for November. So that was cool. So that was something to look at. After the season's over, I'll take a look at that and get ready for Samurai Japan. Right now, I'm more worried about what the Hawks roster is going to look like in the postseason.
Speaking of the Hawks, we had another appearance from Now You See Him, Now You Don't, Tadashi Setsu. He's back, and he pitched quite well, although the numbers weren't good. The bottom line numbers were good. He didn't allow hits. He got a bunch of strikeouts. He looked like Setsu's getting ready for September and October.
Well, that's what we're more concerned about than the Samurai Japan at the moment. Okay. But thank you very much, Max, for the question. We appreciate it. Thank you for your patience. Anyone else with questions, send by email to yakyujohn@gmail.com. Tweet us at #HighHeat@JBWPodcast, or you can go to our Facebook page and leave us a comment or question there. We'll talk to you next week. Enjoy your baseball.
Thanks for listening, and thanks for the carp for making it so much fun.